Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
Hello and welcome to the show. We have a lot going on this week as we talk with personal trainer Nadia Lawan about being a new mom and making time for exercise and taking care of yourself. We also chat with author Rachel D'Alto about the art of flirting and how to maneuver in today's single social scene. We then chat about the amazing movie called The Help, starring Emma Stone, Viola Davis, and Octavia Spencer. And then we round things out with a killer remix from JLS called Take a Chance on Me.
Capture your need for sound.
There's so much activity that goes on after the birth of your new baby. New mommies and even moms who are having their second or third child are kept so busy with keeping their baby content, with feedings happening at all hours of the day and night, not to mention the never-ending tasks of changing their diapers and having clean clothes on hand. In all of this hustle and bustle and sleep-deprived days and nights, it can be very hard for a new mom to take care of herself physically. Joining us on the show to talk about new moms and exercise is our personal trainer, Nadia Lawan, who recently had her first baby. Congratulations, Nadia, and welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Kelly. What time is it anyway? It's crazy. I don't even know. Night, day, you're feeding all the time.
This is what I understand. When my sister had the babies, it was all over the place. So first of all, I have to congratulate you. And second of all, ask you, with becoming a new mom, can you tell us about the experience? Because when we last spoke with you back in June, actually, you were deciding at the time if you were going to have a natural birth or going to try that epidural.
Yeah, this was a big, big debate for me. I really wanted to go all natural if I could. And I think everyone goes through this. Most people, you know, don't know if they want to get that needle, don't know if they really want to be medicated. But I did a lot of research, and the day I went in, I was very prepared, and I knew exactly what I was going, you know, exactly what was going to happen. And I went for all natural. And everything went well, so I got my natural childbirth.
Excellent.
No epidural.
And so, like you just mentioned a few seconds ago, you were very confident going in that there would be no drugs.
Yeah, I was very confident, but at the same time, you have to be open-minded because something could happen, and you never know. You could go in and the pain could be unbearable, so you really have to keep that in mind. I was very lucky. I was able to handle it. But circumstances might have been different. I would have taken the epidural if I had to. And you never know, you know, if the baby's breech or this or that, you might have to get cesarean. So you can't have absolutes. You can definitely try and prepare yourself, which is what I did. But you can't have absolutes when it comes to pregnancy.
Okay. What was it like in the week following the birth? Was everything, you know, a blur because of the baby's eating and sleeping schedule by probably not even being a schedule yet?
Oh my gosh, there was definitely no schedule. And, you know, there's a lot going on with your body. A person just came out of you. So things are stretched. Things are not where they should be. You know, there's a lot of liquid coming out of you in different areas. So you're really not used to it. And you have to feed the baby and take care of the baby at the same time. You're going through a lot of emotional things. You're up at night. So there's no schedule. Schedule? What's a schedule? I don't even have a schedule now. You try your best. And you're pretty much at the mercy of the baby.
Have things started to settle down for you now? And are you at the stage of getting back into regular exercise?
Well, you know, in general, you're supposed to wait until, they say 6 weeks. So after your first postnatal checkup with your doctor, that's when you can start working out. Now, if you've been working out until you give birth, and you're in great shape until you give birth, then the chances are that you could probably start things earlier than those 6 weeks. But I'm not a doctor, and, you know, personal trainer or not, I would wait the 6 weeks. You really don't know what's moved or how your body's doing. So until the doctor says you're good to go, I wouldn't do anything big. You can still start by doing those walks and some light swimming and, you know, some stretching and toning exercises that are all low impact. But I would definitely wait those 6 weeks to make sure everything's in check.
And how are you, Nadia Lawan, going to ease yourself back up to, you know, like a significant level of fitness?
Can you hear her snoring?
Just
my little
bit.
One is snoring. It's so cute. She's on me right now. You know, you have to ease your way slowly. So what I'm going to do is right now, since I've hit my 6 week point, I've just started. What I had started slowly is, like I said, those stretching exercises here and there. You can do some ab work just as long as, you know, you you didn't have any major abdominal problems. Sometimes people's abdominal muscles kind of, there's a gap in the middle. So if you don't have that, then you can start slowly. The walking is what I've started. But you don't want to push yourself at the starting. I know we all want to lose the flab because you're definitely flabby after giving birth. But you can't do it quickly. You have to take your time and realize you just gave birth to a child. You have to eat properly. You're nursing that child. So that's your main goal. If it means that any time in between you're going to do workouts, take the kid and you play with your baby, you know. You can lie down on the ground and stimulate your baby by, like, lifting them up. You're doing an arm exercise by doing that. Or put them on the ground and look at them and at the same time lift your legs and get those butt workouts and those little leg workouts at the same time. So there's really stuff you can do with your baby that will help you get back in shape slowly.
And it seems just by the fact that you mentioned that is that you already have your own weight. It's your baby. Like if you wanted to start doing weights, you've got your baby weight going on.
And keep in mind that weight is getting bigger. So yeah, it might be a 6-pound weight when it starts. But after holding, you know, a 6-pound, 7-pound, 8-pound, 10-pound baby all day long, or you're lifting the baby, you're carrying the baby, you're putting the baby to sleep, you're going to definitely get a workout on your own. So just walk around with the baby. Do stuff with the baby. It's a workout. We don't even realize it.
Joining us on the show right now is our personal trainer, Nadia Luan, who herself has just had a little baby. Do you find that because you kept yourself fit, you know, throughout the pregnancy, that, you know, the birth went easier and that you perhaps have more energy than other moms who maybe didn't maintain a level of fitness? Like, did you notice that, Nadia?
I can't say that as an absolute, but I definitely think that if you're keeping yourself in shape before you get pregnant and even during pregnancy, some women, you know, never exercise until they're pregnant and then think, okay, I really got to get in shape. And it's very important to stay, you got to realize that giving birth, it's like a workout. You're preparing yourself for this day where you want to be in shape. If you're not in shape, you're going to be on the bed giving birth. You're going to be horizontal the whole time. I was able to walk around. I was able to, you know, be on an exercise ball, to be doing like squat positions and get myself ready for birth. And that was during labor, too. I was able to do that. Some people are not because they're too tired. You want to be able to do that. So, yeah, I do think it makes a big difference. And right after, if you're in a better shape, you're going to be able to bounce back faster, and you're not going to have those couple of days where you're just bedridden. You don't want that when you have a newborn screaming in the middle of the night.
Right, exactly. And I know that some, you know, some new moms go through various degrees of, we'll call it the baby blues, but I know that in certain instances that's, you know, it's much more severe than that with, you know, some ladies requiring medication. But for those, you know, new moms who are not experiencing anything too dramatic with, I guess, mood swings, if we want to call it that, do you think that regular exercise can help them get through it better?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, because you have to understand that a lot of it is in our heads. I always said, oh, I was never going to get the baby blues. It's not our choice. The days after, there's so much going on, so many hormones, that you are a little bit sad. Sometimes you're crying, and it could be a happy sad. It could be, it's just emotions flowing everywhere. But if we can exercise and get our mind frame in a very positive place, it'll definitely help.
Okay. And I know you and I have been friends for a long time, and you sort of mentioned it briefly before, but, you know, you are a very focused person. I know you like to achieve a lot. You've always kept yourself in great shape. You mentioned the fact that schedules for you have gone right out the window.
Out
the window. And, you know, is it important? Have you learned this already, Nadia, to give yourself a break?
You know, you have to somehow. I know that it's hard, and I'm in a situation where I do have help. I have family, I have friends, I have my husband, but some people are, you know, single moms, and they have to do everything on their own. But if there's some way that you can get a moment to yourself, you know, when the baby's sleeping, you can take your bassinet in to the washroom or something, put it near you, and get in a bath, take a nice relaxing bath, or do some stretches, do some yoga if you can. I'm telling you, it's like little vacations. And it's not, I'm not saying you want to get away from your child. You just need that time to kind of decompress a bit. It's really important.
Now, you just brought up the word yoga. Are you and the baby going to get involved in like mommy and baby yoga?
We'd love to do some classes. Well, I don't know. I'm deciding for her. But we're thinking of doing swimming. We're not sure. She's still a little young. I have to wait till, you know, 5 months or so. Yoga is a possibility, but there's definitely a lot of classes and a lot of things we can do. The only thing we're doing right now is walking because she's still so young. So we'll see in the next couple of weeks what we can get ourselves involved in.
And do you think too, Nadia, with regards to new moms, the fact that they would get involved in a class, whether it's, you know, mommy and me, baby yoga or the swimming, do you find that that not only helps the new mom physically, but also to be out amongst new moms, it must help them emotionally too?
Oh, yeah. You know what? It's funny because you go to the malls that have these breastfeeding rooms and you chat with all these new moms and you realize you're really in the same boat and you get tips from other moms. You feel better. You feel like you're not the only person who feels flabby, who just had a kid, who doesn't sleep at night, has no schedule. And it suddenly seems not that bad. Like there's a whole bunch of us going through this. It's fine. So I think socializing with other moms is a great thing to do.
And what do you say to a new mom who is telling herself right now that she just doesn't have the time to exercise and take care of herself, you know, because the house is upside down, she's got, you know, a baby that's 2 months, 3 months old screaming and wailing. Like, what do you tell this new mom?
You know what I tell her? I tell her you're getting exercise just by picking her up when she's wailing and walking around. You know what? A lot of times we're so tired that we're very passive. We pick up our child and we sit down and we wonder why they're still crying. I've learned that a lot of times we just have to walk around and be more active, and then the kid's so calm. So just by doing that, you know, when you're walking your baby around, start doing a little squatting or, you know, do some lunges if you can. Put some exercise into there, and that's keeping you active.
And how important, you know, is nutrition for women now post-birth, whether, you know, they're breastfeeding or not? Because I think that goes out the window as well.
It goes out the window, but at the same time, it is very important because you have to nourish. You have to be strong. You're very hungry when you're nursing. In the middle of the night, I'm hungry. You have to eat more. So you want to eat that. You want to eat proper food. If you're eating too much chocolate, then you're having too much caffeine in your body. There's definitely going to be an effect in your child, not a huge one. I don't know the percentages. We definitely have to, you know, talk to a nutritionist. But you want to nourish your body properly in order to do your job properly.
And I know that sleep is at a premium with regards to, you know, the new babies and the fact that they're up at all different times of the day and night. How are you managing the being sleep deprived?
You know what? Everyone tells you something. Everyone gives advice. Even my advice. You know, we all have our own experiences, but everyone tells you, you're a new mom, sleep when the baby sleeps. Sleep when the baby sleeps. I'll tell you one thing. I cannot sleep when the baby sleeps. I try my hardest during the day, but it's not in our nature to sleep during the day. It's very hard. If you can, great. Then take those times and you'll definitely be fine. But there's only so much you can do. What I say is enjoy that time. They're only going to be young once. Realize that you're going to be a zombie. So eat well, exercise well, drink lots of water, and stay as strong as you can.
Are vitamins at all important to you guys right now? Because I know it's so important during the pregnancy. What happens post-birth for new mommies?
Most mommies are supposed to stay on their prenatal vitamins to keep, you know, their iron high, and a lot of them stay on that vitamin. Some doctors tell them to, you know, get off of it or get another one, but for most mothers, it is important to take vitamins.
And what do you say, I guess, as a final, you know, piece of, because again, you're experiencing this right now, and I know that there's moms out there who are on their second or third child, so, you know, this might be something that they've gone through, but for new mommies like yourself, Nadia, what do you say as you guys roll through this first year of being a mom?
Wow. In general, what do we say?
Well,
Hang in there. No, I think it's amazing. You just have to take it day by day. You have to enjoy it all. You have to take those moments for yourself and your husband. Don't forget who you are. But realize that, they're babies. They're going to cry. It's going to be hard. It's really, really not easy some days. And we take that for granted sometimes. We think, oh, what a hard day. She cried all day. Oh, my gosh. But she's only going to be that small once. So just hang in there and enjoy it.
And I'm assuming, too, I know we mentioned that, you know, you're fortunate in the fact that you have a good support system with your husband as well. For even people that are out there, ladies who are single moms, I'm assuming that it's important that they ask for help if they can, like even if it's like a friend or whatever to help them through the tough days.
Oh, yeah. I've always been an independent person and not wanted help from people. I've taken help from my mother, my mother-in-law, my whole family. Every time someone offers something, I say, sure, take the help you can. And don't forget, even if you don't have that support system, there are places you can go. There's the CLSCs. They offer so much help, so much breastfeeding help. There's also, you know, different groups, whether it's like a mom and baby group or at the YMCA, or here in Montreal, we have like Belle Maman, you know, in the West Island. And what they do is, you can go and take courses with your baby. You can learn about things. You can take CPR. You can get that support you need. So it's available. You just have to find it and use it.
Excellent. Nadia, thank you so much for joining us on the show. And I know we'll have you on soon to tell us how the progress is going.
Thank you very much.
That is our personal trainer here on The Kelly Alexander Show, Nadia Lawan.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
You and I normally talk about movie reviews with our film critic, Diana Roldan. But recently I was in the movie theater and I saw an amazing movie and I couldn't wait for you and I to talk about it. Now, the movie is called The Help. You've probably heard about it because it's been around in movie theaters for almost 2 months, but you may not have taken the chance yet to go and see it. And so I'm hoping that after you and I finish this discussion, today, that you will be very inspired to go out and see this film. Now, the film itself is actually based off a 2009 best-selling novel by author Catherine Stockett. Now, I have not yet read the book, but I'm hearing wonderful things about it. And the movie was so great that I can only imagine how good the book is, because normally, I'm sure you find this to be true as well, that the books are usually better than the film adaptations. And again, the movie was amazing, so I can only imagine how awesome and wonderful and well-written this book is. Now, the movie, The Help, which is, again, based off this novel, is set in early 1960s Jackson, Mississippi. There are several characters in the film. There's a few that are obviously more poignant than others. I'm going to talk about the four characters that I find that really make the film. The first one is Skeeter, played by actress Emma Stone, who, as you know, has been in so many movies lately, and she does a great job portraying this character, who is a journalist who decides to write a controversial book from the point of view of African-American maids who work for white families, again, in the area surrounding Jackson. Now, the other character that very much stands out is Abilene, played by the amazing Viola Davis. And she is the first maid that agrees to sort of be a part of this book and to provide information. The other character, again, that sticks out is another maid, by the name of Minnie Jackson, played by scene stealer Octavia Spencer. And we're going to talk more about her in a few moments. And then the other character that sort of sticks out is Hilly Holbrook, played by Bryce Dallas Howard. Again, that is Ron Howard's daughter. She's a very good actress. And she plays a character that you love to hate. She is the ringleader, I guess we could say, of racist women, in this Jackson, Mississippi environment. And she makes you love to hate her. So I guess if we sort of, backtrack just for a second, Skeeter, again, is a character who is an idealistic, young journalist who has been off at university and who has come back to her Jackson, Mississippi roots and, finds or gets interested in wanting to tell the story of African-American maids who work for most often, to some degree at least, racist white families. And so she sort of befriends, Abilene, and then the story sort of kicks off from there where they start, to come up together with these stories and how best to get the stories out to people, obviously who will read this book, to basically show what it's like to live in this civil rights era Jackson, Mississippi environment. And there's many sort of sides to this movie, I guess we'll say. I know some critics have said that it's been, glammed over Hollywood style, that, some important messages about racism are sort of glossed over and you're not getting the full impact of, exactly what it was like to go through these times back in the early 60s and so on, and even before that, obviously. But I think that the movie did a pretty good job of pointing out, specific sort of racist attitudes, because it made me feel very reflective on the fact that, wow, I can't believe stuff like this actually went on. And I'm sure to some degree it's still going on in certain areas, of the world. But it makes you feel very disgusted. So there's many, sort of feelings that you go through watching this movie. You're sad, you're angry that human beings could treat one another this way. You're disappointed again in the human race and how it can sort of segregate, different races and sort of have a superior attitude. So there's a lot going on. Not to mention, it's sort of, off plays against this comedic element of the film, which is indeed very, very funny. And if I can talk about the character Minnie Jackson, she is an amazing character because, and she's played again by the amazing Octavia Spencer, who nails it right on the head when it comes to the comedic timing, the sassiness that she's got going on as this African-American maid, and then also the poignant moments where, you know, you feel the racist attitudes that she, along with her fellow maids, are going through living in this time period, again, in Jackson, Mississippi. So there's so many elements going on. You do have the lighthearted moments, you do have the more serious moments, and I just found it a compelling movie and something that I would definitely want to go back and watch again in the movie theaters. And I have to tell you that I'm very excited to actually get my hands on the DVD when it's released. And just a couple of other sort of points I wanted to bring forth. There's a couple of other actresses in the movie that do a great job. Sissy Spacek in the movie. Also, Allison Janney, you may remember her from The West Wing, and she plays Skeeter's mom. And she's sort of on this balancing beam of, again, having these racist attitudes, but then, you know, having a little bit more of a heart and showing that she does have compassion for her African-American maid. So Allison Janney, a great, great job in this movie as well. And, you know, the movie, it's funny because the movie was apparently made for only $25 million, but it's already grossed over $161 million. So you can see a lot of people are heading out to see this movie. And when I was actually leaving the movie theater, there was a bunch of ladies sort of around me. And as they were walking out, I heard one say to the other, "This is my second time seeing the movie. And I've loved it just as much as the first time." So I think a lot of people will see it twice and again are spreading the word towards their friends to definitely go and check it out. So I'm hoping that you will too. And to sort of inspire you just a little bit further to go and do this, I've decided to play the audio from the movie trailer for you. It should give you a bit of a taste, especially of the sassy attitudes that, you know, these Southern characters have, again, from the Southern United States. And again, to sort of finish off, I really hope that a bunch of these actresses are going to get recognized for their work. I really think that basically all four of them, Emma Stone, again, who plays Skeeter, Viola Davis, who plays Abilene, also Octavia Spencer, who plays Minnie, as well as Bryce Dallas Howard, who plays Hilly Holbrook. I believe all of them should actually be up for, if not Golden Globes, the SAG Awards, and of course the Academy Awards as well. An Oscar would definitely fit well, I think, in Octavia Spencer's hands, as well as Viola Davis. She is an excellent actress. Again, she's got a bit of sassy going on. You can tell that she's more of a hurt character in the film, so she portrays that very well. So a shout out to all those actresses. I wish them the best when it comes to award season. And right now, I would like you to take a little listen to, again, the soundtrack, the audio from the movie trailer of The Help, right here on The Kelly Alexander Show.
Sorry, I'm late.
We didn't ever think you'd leave, Ole Miss.
It does take 4 years, Jolene. I got a job today, writing for the Jackson Journal.
Great. You can write my obituary. Charlotte Phelan, dead. Her daughter, still single. Good luck.
Does this dress look handmade?
I reckon when you finish it, won't.
Thank you.
She looked like the winning horse at the Kentucky Derby.
I have drafted the Home Health Sanitation Initiative.
The what?
A bill that requires every white home to have a separate bathroom for the help.
Maybe we should just build you a bathroom outside, Haley.
Minnie?
Hey, Abilene.
Hey, Minnie.
These women raise white children. We love them, and they love us, but they can't even use the toilets in our houses.
Minnie, are you in there?
You are fired!
You said to write about what disturbs me, particularly if it bothers no one else.
I'd like to write something from the point of view of the help.
I want to interview you.
No maid is ever going to tell you the truth. That's a hell of a risk to take in Jackson, Mississippi.
Courage isn't just about being brave. It's about overcoming fear and daring to do what is right for your fellow man.
What changed your mind?
God. And Miss Hilly Holbrook. Change your
thoughts and you change. I'm gonna help with your stories.
We all are. Y'all brought me into this, but I'm gonna finish it.
Have you lost your mind?
No, ma'am, but you about to.
It's quite scandalous. Sounds like Jackson, if you ask me.
You tell Abilene.
Do I have plans for her?
You a godless woman.
We gone done it now.
Long gone are the days when single ladies had to wait around for a guy to flirt with them or ask them out. Females can now be much more proactive about their love life, but that doesn't mean it's not challenging to put yourself out there. To help give you some important social scene tools on flirting and meeting new people is Rachel D'Alto, author of the book I'm Hitting on You Dumbass, A Girl's Guide to Flirting with Even the Most Clueless Men. She's also the founder and CEO of FlipMe.com, which is a service that changes the way that people meet each other. Rachel, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hi, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Rachel, what should a woman know as she enters the current social scene? Can she confidently be proactive about flirting and putting herself out there?
Absolutely. I think she absolutely 100% has to. The days have changed and women are taking over in academics and in the workplace. And it's time for them to really start putting themselves out there in their love lives and going after what they want. And that's, you know, my biggest message for women everywhere is that, you know, it's time to really start going after what you want and stop waiting for what you get.
That's a good motto, actually. Does a woman have to worry that men may not like her proactive approach, you know, in breaking the ice, or does she put that to the side?
I think she should put that to the side. And frankly, the men that I've, you know, discussed this with all across the country, I mean, it's 99.9% of men are welcoming a woman's advances and are dying to kind of get out of the fire, because women, you know, between you and I and your listeners, we have a different intuition, and most women kind of can gauge when a man is receptive and kind of can understand that, you know, this person's on my level, I'm going to approach them, and they don't get shut down. While as the men, it seems, are more inclined to, you know, throw the noodles against the wall and see what sticks. So I think women almost have to take those reins and let them know that they're, you know, they're interested in the guy, because they're the ones who can control the situation and really understand, you know, who's going to be interested.
And what do you say to a woman who is, you know, shy or timid by nature? How can she, like, sort of channel, I guess, her inner sassy self?
You know, I say to go out with a friend, and I think that's the best way that the shyer women can kind of get a grasp of, you know, those reins without actually having to take them herself. Get a great wing woman, you know, someone that's a little more extroverted, preferably someone who's attached so that they don't, you know, run off with their prize, but somebody that they can go out with and say, you know, I feel stronger with somebody next to me. I, you know, feel more comfortable. And then they can kind of work together. You know, it's also the reason why I started my company is for those women who kind of don't know how to make that first move or how to approach somebody without putting themselves too far out there, you know, because it is one of the most difficult things that people have to do is starting that initial conversation.
And what are the key elements that you need, you know, whether you're a man or a woman, to succeed in this current, you know, sort of social scene? Because it seems like there's a lot going on.
There is. People are everywhere and, you know, they're online, offline. And I think that the biggest thing that people need is confidence. And whether you work on that and then go out or work on it while you're out, maybe you need a little liquid courage at times. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, beyond anything else, people really need to understand that no matter who they are, no matter what they look like, they are a good person that deserves to, you know, have somebody to be flirted with, to flirt with others. And as soon as they understand that and that there is someone out there for everybody, you know, that really does make a huge difference. So fake it till you make it confidence.
And something that sort of popped in my mind as you were talking, you know, again, because a lot of, you know, women and men are shy when they get out there, especially if it's not something that they've done too much before. You know, inevitably, I suppose on occasion, it's not going to work out. Do you almost have to be like a thick-skinned wannabe actor who, you know, goes to several auditions and, you know, not all of them are going to work out, but you keep plugging at it?
Absolutely. I mean, most people are going to get rejected at some point in their life, but you have to be rejected. And at some point, you know, you're going to realize that that person's not right for you, and then you move on. And it kind of just lets, you know, natural selection essentially take over. And you know, do you fall in love with the first person that you meet at a bar? No, but you know what? They might not be interested in you and you might need to move on. But understand that, you know, there's someone else out there that's going to have a different opinion. You know, just because you're attracted to somebody doesn't mean they're going to be attracted back. And you have to be prepared for that. But at the same time, there's, you know, there's reward in that risk. So you have to take a little bit of a risk to get that reward.
Joining us on the show is founder and CEO of FlipMe.com and author of the book, I'm Hitting on You, Dumbass, Rachel D'Alto. Rachel, what is your stance on online dating? Do you think people are hiding behind their computers? Should they, I guess, just sort of get out there, whether it's a bar, restaurant, or even, you know, at the gym or the tennis courts or something?
I think online dating has its purpose. I think people have gotten a little too comfortable hiding behind the computer screen, and it's kind of disingenuous most of the time. And the biggest frustration that I hear from people who are users of online dating is, you know, I'm not getting what I see. And people really still need to have that face-to-face connection, be able to realize if there's any sort of chemistry. And while I do think online dating has its purpose, I think it's only one tool in the arsenal, and that they need to be out in public and meeting people organically to really start these, you know, genuine relationships. Not to say that some can't start online, but, you know, make it part of your dating tools. Just don't make it the only thing that you'd use.
And something else I would just ask you about the online dating thing. I think a lot of people, when they start the online dating thing, especially let's say they've narrowed it down to one person, they will sort of stick with the online part of it maybe a bit too long. Like if it is someone obviously that's in your city or your town, I'm assuming that you should make that personal meeting happen very, very shortly after starting the online portion of it.
As soon as you're talking on the phone regularly, I mean, at some point you do have to meet in person. I know people that have had these essentially virtual romances forever. I mean, there's people out there that have been talking for years and still haven't met. And, you know, that says a lot for society and kind of where our relationships are going. So if you are interested in having a legitimate, you know, relationship with somebody, you actually have to see them. So eventually get off the phone, get off the computer, and set up a meeting place, preferably in public, and see if there's an actual connection, unless you can plan on wasting your time for, you know, years and years.
What do you say to young men and women who are in a new setting, you know, as they enter college or university? Is this a chance for them to start fresh with new people who may not know, you know, that they're shy? Like, it's almost like they get a new chance at this?
Absolutely. It allows them to kind of take on a new cloak and put on whatever mask they want to be on that, you know, that next stage of their life. I know a lot of people use a move or entrance into college or exiting from college and starting in the workforce to kind of be who they want to be that they couldn't be before. And so many people end up kind of in a typecasted role, but it's time to kind of step it up and take on the next one, because what have you got to lose, you know, and you have everything to gain. So that's a perfect time to really kind of step up and become the person that you really want to be.
And I guess it's important too, when they take that step, that they are trying to be the person that they know that they are, and that they're not trying to be something fake that they can't keep up, you know, for years and years.
Yeah, they have to stay genuine. I mean, and it really is a matter of, you know, some people, especially in high school or, you know, even grammar school, they kind of get thrown into a spot and get, you know, like I said, typecasted into some sort of personality role. And especially when you go to college, you know, it's your chance to be the person that you are. We're not saying to, if you're shy by nature and you're still shy, that you should all of a sudden be like dancing on a pole or, you know, be the life of the party. It's not about that, but it's all about, you know, gaining that confidence and becoming that person that you want to be. So you definitely have to have it in you.
Tell us about FlipMe.com. What's its purpose and how does it work?
Essentially, it's a way for women to flirt without giving out their personal information. We sell flirt cards, and the front of the card has a sexy, sassy, or a sweet saying on it. And then on the back of the card, there's a code for the guy to connect with you. So if you're out and about and you're not sure how to break the ice, you can pull out one of these flirty cards and then hand it to the guy, essentially saying, you know, I want to connect with you. If he's interested, he goes to the website, enters the code, and then you're connected through our messaging center. So it's kind of like giving out your number without giving out your number, because a lot of women have encountered some interesting issues. I've heard so many stories I can't even repeat. You know, they gave out too much information, and then they can't get rid of them. So I consider it almost like a vetting process. It's a flirting and vetting.
Okay, and it's not an online dating site, though.
No, there's no searching. Everything you do in real life. You know, the cards are physical, real cards. And the only thing that you do online is the method part of it, but no one's going to be searching for you. No one knows that you're a part of the website. It's just kind of like your personal web page for this guy to go to and say, you know what, let me check her out and see if I'm interested. But we aren't a dating site at all. I would, you know, put it more on the flirt because we're not really about finding a relationship. We're about finding the connection and finding somebody to flirt with and then seeing where it goes. Kind of the way it was in the old days.
Right. God, that's awesome. And do you find, Rachel, that people who have signed up to flipme.com have a new confidence about themselves, or does it take them a bit of time to adjust, you know, to being proactive, to being out there and handing out these cards?
I think there's both. I think it starts off as the latter, that they're like initially like, wait a second, you know, can I really do this? And then once they get the cards on them, and I find this all the time, like when women actually get the package, and the packaging's beautiful, so they love the packaging, and they have it out, then it becomes kind of that inner sense of confidence that they inspire, where it's like, wait a second, I can do this, and, you know, and I can be who I want to be without actually having to worry about it.
Now,
I think it does both.
Okay. And obviously, you know, since you founded the company and you're seeing it progress, what have you learned as the sort of CEO and founder of it? Like, is it exactly what you envisioned it to be, or is it even more than you thought, or different avenues than you thought it would be?
It's definitely more than I thought. And I think what really made it successful in my eyes from day one is the message behind it. And like I said, our message is really to empower women to go after what they want. And the response that I've gotten from that message has been so fantastic and, you know, wonderful, from the users to press to everybody. People are embracing it because they're ready for something different, and they're ready for women to kind of step up to the plate and take over. So we're taking over the world.
That's awesome. And I was reading as well, Rachel, that you have taught, you know, classes on flirting. From a teacher's perspective, what is it like when you see, you know, these people that sign up to take the class? Like, I guess, what's your overall perspective on them? Like, there must be a thread that links all of them that you notice that they need to maybe get rid of so that they are better at flirting and meeting new people.
I think I hate to put it back to, you know, a book from long ago, but the rules kind of really messed with women's heads, I think. And my whole thing is you have to throw out those rules. You know, you still want to be chased, but women are very concerned about coming off a certain way. And that's kind of the thread that links them together, is teaching women to really kind of embrace their sexuality, embrace their flirtiness, and embrace their sassiness. And that's kind of what links them all together. And as soon as they kind of get the tools to do that, they're rock stars. So that's what I've seen in a lot of my classes, is as long as they understand that they can do certain things and can be a certain way, it's limitless.
So it's almost like they have to disregard what society has said that women should or shouldn't be.
Exactly. Because most society, when you actually talk to them, they want to be different, but they need somebody to tell them that it's okay to be. So, and that's what we're really trying to do, is let them know it's okay to be a little more assertive and have a little more fun and a little more playful. And you don't have to be the little woman anymore. You know, if you're running the boardroom, or you're valedictorian at Princeton, you know, it's time for you to kind of take control in the other areas of our life.
And what are your key pieces, I guess, of advice to both men and women who are trying to change their ways and handle their social lives differently? Because it feels like it's a mindset shift.
It totally is. And that's something, it's my advice for guys and girls is, you know, to throw out the rules, throw out whether it be, you know, rules for guys, rules for women, and follow your gut, you know, and really kind of get out there and try to take chances. Understand that at some point you're going to get hurt, but, you know, getting hurt allows you to grow from it. So take those chances, get out there, and, you know, be confident and really kind of understand that no matter who you are, what you look like, you're a great person who deserves somebody. So, you know, don't fall into the traps of self-despair.
Awesome. And I have to ask you about flipme.com for a second. If ladies want to sign up to this, do they specifically have to be in the U.S. or is it worldwide as well?
You know what? We just actually opened up to Canada and the UK. So we just got clearance in those two countries. So US, Canada, and the UK were available to ship.
Excellent. And so they just go to the website and sort of follow the instructions?
Yep. Right now you can go to the website. You can order online. There are a couple stores in Canada that are going to be carrying the cards themselves. And I'm not sure when exactly that's going to start. But there will be a listing on the stores for retail locations where you could pick up a pack.
Excellent. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
That's Rachel D'Alto, founder and CEO of FlipMe.com and author of the book, I'm Hitting on You Dumbass Again. Check her out, FlipMe.com. I'm a flirt. Soon as I see her walk up in the club, I'm a flirt. Winking eyes at me when I roll up on them dubs, I'm a flirt. Sometimes when I'm with my chick on the low, I'm a flirt. And when she's with a man looking at me, damn right, I'm a flirt. So homie, don't bring your girl to meet me, cause I'm a flirt. And baby, don't bring your girlfriend to eat, cause I'm a flirt. Please believe it, unless your game is tight and you trust her, then don't bring around me, because I'm a flirt. Now I swear to tell the truth and the whole truth, when it comes to those I'll be pimping like I supposed to, rolling like I supposed to, shining like I supposed to, in the club freaking with honeys like I supposed to. I don't understand when a player bring his girlfriend to the club, freaking all on the floor with his girlfriend in the club, and wonder why all these players trying to holler at her. Just soon as she go to the bathroom, player I'm gonna holler at her. A dog on the prowl when I'm walking through the mall. If I could, man, I probably would work with all of y'all. Yeah, yeah, homie, you say she your girlfriend, but when I step up to her, I'ma be like cousin. Believe me, man, this is how them players do it in the shot. And plus, we got them player at flirters in the shot. Now the moral of the story is cuff your chick, cause hey, I'm black, handsome, I sing, plus I'm rich, and I'm a flirt.
Hey, homie, you ain't getting no money, you better keep away from me, dude.
Well, if you love your girl and wanna keep your girl, hope you walking up and asking me to meet your girl, because I'm well enough to flirt when I speak to girl. She winked her eyes on the slide, I seen your girl. Better treat your girl right, cause another man will. Better treat your girl like another man will, cause you leave your wife and I see your wife. Let me be for real, how long you think it's finna be your wife? When I'm living the life, you just getting it right. Your old lady look at me cause you ain't hitting it right. She probably used to like you cause you the being the type. But that's until it came along and put some dick in the light. When I seen how that ass look at thick in the light, I know that she was checking me and digging the ice. Hey, if I get that tonight, better hit that twice. I can't even make a mind if I hit that right. You know, smack that thing, sit that right. Up on that dresser, yeah, that's right. Pulling on her hair like we getting in a fight. Yeah, I know it's kinda tight, but it'll sweat just right. So if you're sexy and she pass me, don't be upset, G, cause you might catch me trying to catch a glance up a skirt, then we clan in reverse. If I see her and I'm like a dance,
let's go, y'all. When I pull up to the club, all the shouters be like,
damn, 28,
then I be like, girl, you know just who I am.
Damn, don't hate, hate.
See, I done fell in love with a stripper, y'all. All I do is flirt with her and I get them draws. And I don't need no help, I got it down packed. Teddy Payne was born to flirt, now you can't down that. Now I'm a forever, I'm in or out of town. That's why they call me Teddy Pender ass. I be like, I'ma see ya. Little mama, me, I'm on pain. What is your name? I'm feeling your vibe and I'm hoping you feel the same. I'ma wink my eye and let you know I got the game. When I pass by, I know exactly what you say. He's
so fine.
And yes, he's so
cool.
Now hate's on it.
Soon as I see her walk up in the club, I'm a flirt. When eyes at me when I roll up on them dubs, I'm a flirt. Sometimes when I'm with my chick on the low, I'm a flirt. And when she's with a man looking at me, damn right, I'm a flirt. So homie, don't bring your girl to meet me, cause I'm a flirt. And baby, don't bring your girlfriend to eat, cause I'm a flirt. Please believe it, unless your game is tight and you trust her, then don't bring around me, because I'm a flirt. Now if you walk up in the club with a bad chick and she looking at me, then I'm gon' hit. Man, jacking for chicks, I tried to quit it, but I'm a player, homie, so I had to hit it. While you buying her drinks in the club, acting like you in love, stunting like you all thug. We were switching numbers. She looking at you and I walk by. You turn your head, she wink her eye. I can't help it if she checking for a platinum type of guy. She be calling me daddy and I be calling her mommy. She be calling you Kelly when your name is Tommy. I don't know. When you bring them round me, like, let me remind you that I am the king of R&B. Like, do you know what that means?
That means if you love your chick, don't bring her to the VIP, cause I might leave with your chick. Just keeping it real, it's a player's field. Don't take no chick to the club when you just met her, cause I'ma flirt with her, and he gon' flirt with her. And if she looking at good she gon' flirt with her.
I'ma flirt, soon as I see her walk up in the club, I'ma flirt.
Oh yeah,
when I roll up, believe it,
I'ma flirt.
Sometimes when I'm with my chick on the low,
I'ma flirt.
And when she's with a man looking at me, damn right,
I'ma flirt.
So homie, don't bring your girl
ooh,
to me, cause
I'ma flirt.
And baby, don't bring your
believe
girlfriend
when I
to me,
cause I'ma flirt.
Please believe it, unless your game is tight and you trust her,
then don't bring her around me, because I'ma flirt.
I'ma
okay,
I'ma
T.I.
I'ma flirt,
T-Pain.
Ladies, if your man ain't hitting it right.
I just wanted to take a moment to have a bit of a follow-up discussion to a topic that you and I talked about or spoke about last week when I had the very awesome guest, Dr. Gay Culverhouse, on the show. As you may remember, she was the former president of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and now has a program, an initiative out called Players Outreach, playersoutreach.org, that helps former NFL players, football players, deal with the many potential, and not even just potential, you know, these are very serious injuries on occasion, you know, after effects of playing this sort of violent sport for many years. And a lot of them go through many neurological issues as well as motor skill issues after, you know, they retire. And a lot of times the money that they do make, you know, during their time in the NFL, you know, does not cover them for the rest of their lives. And if they don't sort of have a backup plan for another career after they retire, a lot of times they're in trouble. And then again, if they do have health issues, that may make it more difficult for them to find employment, you know, after retiring from the sport, because, you know, they're maybe physically unable to perform whatever task that they would need to do for a job. So I think a lot of former NFL players are in serious trouble, especially because I actually did an interview several years ago with the author of a book. She was writing this book sort of on the point of view, or from the point of view of the wives of football players. And especially if you're married to what they call, you know, a blue collar NFL player or a journeyman player, a lot of these players don't last very long with a specific team. And a lot of times they don't last very long in the league. I remember at the time, I think the average career span for a player, again, not a superstar player like you might see with a Peyton Manning, but, you know, a regular player who is sort of an offensive lineman, or, you know, even maybe a receiver, but just isn't that standout player, they only last like 3 or 4 years in the league. So they've got a lot of time, especially because, you know, a lot of times they retire right around the age of 30. So that's a long life left for them to lead. And if they have serious injuries to deal with, they're not going to have the funds to do it. So anyway, you and I had that discussion, obviously, last week with Dr. Gay Culverhouse, who had some important messages with regards to sports and taking care of yourself. And again, the after effects of this violent sport, football. Now, I can honestly tell you, I'm a huge football fan. I love both the Canadian Football League, obviously here up in Canada, my Montreal Alouettes, as I call them, my Montreal Alouettes. But also, I'm a fan of the NFL, again, the National Football League. I've been a huge New York Giants fan for a long time. But it was funny because, you know, after doing that interview with Dr. Culverhouse, you know, I watched, you know, Sunday football this past weekend, and watching my Giants play against the Philadelphia Eagles, it was, I don't know, it was like I was seeing the sport a little bit with fresh eyes. Now, obviously, I still love the sport. I just think it's fascinating that it's sort of this cross between, you know, finesse with the quarterbacks needing to weave the ball into their receivers or their tight ends. And even, again, a finesse sport in the fact that the running backs sometimes make it through these holes that you don't even think, you know, it's possible for them to squeeze through, and they're bouncing all over the field, making it, you know, down towards the opposing team's, you know, end zone. But then again, it's, again, this cross between that, this finesse game, and then again, the very violence of it where, you know, the two front lines are smacking into each other, these big 300-pound men going at it, and again, you know, taking down these receivers that are not as built as they are, and again, taking out you know, running backs as well that are, again, not as big as some of these linemen. So it's weird. It's finesse, but it's also violent. So I was looking at the game this past weekend with a bit of fresh eyes, and I have to say, it concerned me in the fact that, again, I'm a New York Giants fan, so normally I hate whatever team we're playing. But I was watching, you know, Michael Vick, you know, the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, I know a lot of people not a fan of Michael Vick for what he's done in the past. But if we sort of just take that to the side for a second, he was coming off a concussion, you know, and it scared me because, you know, his team said that he was good to go. I know he was cleared by a third party neurologist, which is, again, was an initiative that Dr. Gay Culverhouse managed to get put into the league. But it was just frightening to me because it wasn't even like 7 days, you know, I think since his last game and he was out there. And then, you know, I saw him take a couple of shots and it was just like, wow, there's so many of these players that are having that happen to them. And I was cringing about what's going on in their brains, especially because they're being rattled about. And it's not just being rattled about. It's an injury that they're sustaining. And I think a lot of people get caught up in the fact that they do have their pads on, their shoulder pads, their helmet, which, as we heard from Dr. Culverhouse, really doesn't protect you against, you know, having these concussions. And I know a point that was brought up by the commentators watching this game is that Michael Vick decided, you know, to not wear a mouthpiece. And I know they haven't sort of really determined if mouthpieces will sort of prevent or at least reduce the amount of symptoms that you would get if you sustain a concussion. But because he was, you know, it was such a noisy place where they were playing and he was trying to, you know, get the instructions out, his calls to his players, he didn't want to have the mouthpiece in because he didn't feel that he could bark out his snap count, you know, as well as if he did have it in. So he chose not to have it. So again, it was just, you know, a lot of these players are trying to win at all costs because there's such pressure on them to perform. And again, the teams, you know, even though they say they're for the welfare of their players, I know a lot of them, the attitudes in the locker room is basically suck it up, princess, you know, you need to get out there and perform and win for us. And so it's kind of like this vicious circle. And if you were watching the game or at least saw the highlight film, you know, Michael Vick is now out with a broken hand. So, and maybe that's a bit of a blessing in disguise because I still don't feel that he was ready to play with his concussion, but now he broke his hand. And then again, to sort of follow through with that, the attitudes of the locker room, like he went, you know, went into the locker room, I guess got an x-ray or whatever it was, found out that his hand was broken, and then came back out and did another series anyway. And the only reason that he was taken out of the game, because they would have let him play the game with the broken hand, is the fact that his hand was swelling up and he couldn't actually take the snap. He couldn't grip the ball properly. And obviously that's a danger for them to have a fumble and lose the ball, you know, anyway. So it's such a weird thing where, again, I love the sport. I know so many of us love this sport, but there has to be a happy medium where these players are being taken care of and also that they can have the attitude, you know, I'm hurt, I'm going to take myself out and take care of myself and get better so that I don't rush myself and come back in. And a good example of that is Sidney Crosby in the NHL. You know, he's been out for months and months and months, and he's only now sort of getting back to it. I mean, he's been doing obviously a lot of training and trying to make sure the symptoms are gone, but at least there it feels like they haven't rushed him. And maybe that's partly himself not letting himself be rushed and partly his doctors and the team. So a credit to them for taking the time that it's needed to get him back out there. But again, in the NFL, it just feels like, again, it's like this brutal sport where you just have to suck it up and get back out there. So I just wanted to sort of bring that to you and the fact that it was interesting watching, you know, Sunday football this weekend with this new fresh eyes that I have. And again, not knowing, you know, how to sort of go forward with that. Again, I'm hoping that people like Dr. Gay Culverhouse will help the NHL, rather help the NFL and its players and its administrators realize that more help is needed to make sure these players stay safe. And again, if you want more information, she obviously has done so much work with this. So check out her website again, playersoutreach.org.
Bring on the remix.
Dirty lies. I know you know there's something here, but you can never.
Come to the end of another Kelly Alexander show, and I want to give a big shout out to my guests, Nadia Lawan, as well as author Rachel D'Alto. Don't forget, if you have any comments or questions, very simple, email me at kelly@kellyalexandershow.com. And as per usual, I'd like to leave you with your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from H. Jackson Brown Jr. You must take action now that will move you towards your goals. Develop a sense of urgency in your life. There you go. Have a wonderful week. You and I'll chat soon.
The Kelly Alexander Show is hosted by Kelly Alexander. Produced by Esteban Vargas, Barbara Purcell, Chris Paré, and Kelly Alexander. Original themes and production music composed by Ian Campbell. Thanks for listening.